The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
At 4 o'clock, we kicked off the show talking with Frank McDonald, the former environment editor of the Irish Times, about the Tower of Tara Street. So if anybody's been in Dublin City Centre recently, they'll have seen it. It is a new building close to Tara Street, Dart Station. And Frank called it the dark portal that is photobombing every photogenic aspect in Dublin City Centre. Not a fan of it, it has to be said. Take a little listen.
What we have is a building that is 22 stories in height, built in a location that was never designated for a high-rise building, and it's now the tallest building in the city. And it outstrips the big tower down at Capitol Dock at the end of John Rogerson's Quay by 3 metres. But the difference between the two, Kieran, and it's really important, is that the Capitol Dock Tower created its own environment down at the nether end of John Rogerson's Quay, where it doesn't have any impact on George in Dublin. Whereas this one is right in the core of the city. And that is the thing that is really offensive about it.
So, wrong building in the wrong place, according to Frank. We spoke to Sean Keyes as well from Progress Ireland, the think tank, who was in disagreement, but agreed with Frank that the system that decides where things go, where buildings go, what gets built where and what it looks like, is dysfunctional in this country. Roisin Murphy is with me, the architect, artist, conservation activist and lecturer in Griffith College, Dublin. Roisin, would you tend to agree with him or not?
That's just a loaded question, I feel. I feel entrapment. I've written extensively about this because while we were arguing about Johnny Ronan's tower, quietly in that corner, they were removing Hawkins House and they were saying, it's the ugliest building in Dublin. Ugliest building. Let's get rid of it. And then you were kind of going, well, what are they putting in their place? And no matter how often you said it, 22 stories doesn't sound a lot. Does it? You think 22 stories, you know, I've been to New York. But it's quite a big building.
Yeah.
And you couldn't really get any traction on it at the time because there was this argument. We were, you know, people were arguing about height rather than position, as you would say. Mm-hmm. And you were kind of going, this is incredibly close to Trinity College. And it really does dominate. It got rid of one of the oldest pubs in Dublin. I think it was the Stone. What was that one famous for Trinity students drinking? That was removed from there. But it is that kind of thing. You just sound like somebody who only wants to live in the 18th century, and that's all you ever got told. You want to live in the 18th century, Roisin. But it does make it very dark, but it's very imposing and overpowering and overbearing on Trinity College. And at the time, there was a huge argument because you were kind of also wrapped up into this. It's like, why do we have to tear down modern buildings to build more modern buildings? There's embodied carbon. And can we not just do up Hawkins House, which is entirely feasible? So there's a lot of dialogue around the time, and a lot of people just saying Hawkins House is too ugly, needs to get rid of. So
when Hawkins
difficult.
House was built, was it considered ugly?
Oh, I think so. I don't think any. I think it wasn't one of those ones, but it was a civil service building.
Sometimes I wonder whether some of the buildings that we're doing at the moment that you might think look good now because they're very modern, you think, will this just be the Hawkins House of the future?
I think it was one of those. It was no class, but it did have the screen on the green with the little man. There was a little guy there, and there was a kind of a proportionality to it. It wasn't too imposing. There wasn't an issue of height. There was an issue of, it was a kind of a glass, simple glass structure. It did need to be updated. It wasn't a classic 1970 brutalist building. It was a bit blah. It wasn't really a distinctive concrete building. Like, we had the motor tax office. Do you remember the old motor tax office?
No, where was that?
That was down at the back of the forecourts. And that was kind of a wedge-shaped building that was really distinctively modernist and brutal and made of concrete. We've actually very few of them.
Is that still there?
No, it's gone. It's now a very bland. Sorry, any architects involved, I apologise. It's just, I do have a love of that early modernist architecture, that because we have so little of it. So to remove one, to put in a building of not really any standing. But the one thing about the Black Portal is it just snuck in. And no matter how many, because we talked about it a lot on News Talk. I was on Sinead Ryan's programme at the time, and I think she just hated it every time I go, there's a building going up there, because it does change that area.
Yeah.
Do you like it, Kieran?
Do you know what? The building itself, right? Frank really, really dislikes the black and blue exterior to it. I actually don't mind the look of it that much.
I don't mind its expression either.
But I don't like where it is.
No, it's rubbish,
and again, the same thing. I know you stand accused of wanting to and oppose progress
but
or something.
It isn't. It's about scale.
Yeah.
And it is that thing, like, we're a dark, as you can see, anybody looking out today, it is not a bright city. We are a dark, low-lying creature that lies at the upper hemisphere on the Western Atlantic, and we are darker than England, France, Spain. So anything tall casts a longer shadow. So, you know, necessarily we should be building slightly lower because of light. And anybody who, well, our babies in vitro or whatever they call it, they all have to take vitamin D.
In utero.
Thank you, Ciarán. In utero.
It was a Nirvana album.
I remember the cover. But we lose so much by lack of daylight. So you're kind of going, we have to plan it. We have to take it into consideration. And if you ask people to take it into consideration, you're accused of being born in the 18th century, wanting potties under your bed, or being anti-progress or anti-housing. These are the three things that get levied. But I do agree with you. I quite like the form of it. I like the colour.
Tony Reddy is with us as well, the chairman of Reddy Architecture and Urbanism and a former president of the Royal Institute of the Architects of Ireland. Tony, what do you think about this building and where it's located?
Well, at the heart of this argument, Ciarán, is that we have a problem in Ireland, as they have in Britain. Both countries are outliers now in Europe. This debate would not occur in most European countries because the way we do planning here is we colour maps and write policy. So you get these debates about individual sites. The typical European city, whether it's Copenhagen, Stockholm, Hamburg, Freiburg, Berlin, Barcelona, Lisbon, the city plan is generally in three dimensions. It's prepared by the city, and the city determines where the tall buildings are. Some particularly notable cases are Paris, where they decided after Montparnasse Tower to generally put all future towers in La Défense outside the city in a separate zone. That's a policy for Paris. We don't really have a proper policy here, except in the written word. And I've argued long and hard that that's not the way to plan our cities. The one hope, while I don't believe that the new Planning and Development Act passed last November solves a lot of problems, it followed the old British model. The one thing it did provide for, which was European, is for European integrated planning. Under what's called urban development zones. And there is the option there to prepare urban development master plans. And that's what we should have. I recently visited with some colleagues of mine from the Irish City Group, Copenhagen and Helsinki, to look at their planning system in detail. I spent a day in both offices. And there, they have 50 of these. The two cities, Helsinki and Copenhagen, are the same size as Dublin. They have roughly 50 of these plans on the go at any one time. They do another 10 or 15 every year. But there is no debate. In fact, the people I met with were planning a piece of the city that didn't exist. It was in Docklands. They had already worked out the heights of the buildings, the building mix, the elements that were going to be kept. And they were arguing about the infrastructure crossover on a junction that didn't exist. That's the way to plan a city. That's the way the Romans did it, the Greeks did it, the way the Renaissance signores did it. Our own city, our own White Street commissioners did it. And that's the way the best planning is done.
Sorry for the long answer,
but in essence.
So you have the debate then when it comes to formulating the plan, and then you have fewer debates about individual buildings.
It's looked at holistically. I mean, one of the things I found fascinating, about 2 years ago, I was in Aarhus in Copenhagen with the actual council, and they had a city plan with them. And the political spectrum is much wider there. 13 political parties from the extreme right to the extreme left, and all of them said, this is the reason they don't argue about the plan the way our council do. This was their plan, conceived by their planners. And the difference between planners in Britain and Ireland and the rest of Europe is planners in Europe are urbanists. They're usually architect or architect planners. You rarely get they do have planner policy writers, but they plan. Our people don't plan.
So
we get this anomaly.
Yeah, Frank McDonald did mention earlier in Helsinki, I think there have been 120 odd kind of people working in the planning department, and about 110 of them were architects.
Yes. It's true, though. Tony's not wrong about that.
Yeah. It's actually 450 they have, of which it's even higher than numbers. But there's a small group who do development control in our local authorities. They're all doing development control, and very few are involved in planning because they don't have time. I don't blame the planners. I blame the system we have. And it was a missed opportunity. Okay. In fact, I was staggered when I heard the new development plan. They never looked to Europe. So they just looked to Britain.
Roisin, what do we change that ensures that you might get a building like that new building at Tara Street, but that it's in a more suitable location? It's further down the docks.
Okay, well, I think and this brings in another issue about what's happening in the political landscape about 3D spatial planning at the moment, is that we had about 10 years ago we had a lot of zoning and planning. There was particularly after the Docklands, because the Docklands quite a successful planning area. We have a couple of high buildings. We had a zoned planning area for high rise. And it was allowed for, because of the emergency in housing, to overrule some of those areas. You could suddenly put in, if there was seen that it was, helped the situation we were in, they could override certain planning framework issues. And we saw things, and that I actually think created a huge amount of conflict within the community. So we had planners saying, no, we're not going to put this building in, and then it going to on board Planola and them saying, actually, this is meeting all the strategic housing needs, it's going in. And then log jams of conflict between communities, spatial planners and on board Planola. So you had the perfect war, and we're still feeling the effects of it, where there was minimum house. Do you remember there was the co-living thing?
Yeah.
So all of that happened against the wish of the planners, to be fair to the planners. So one of the most crucial things about it, and this is because we have a market-led liberal capitalism driving an awful lot of our planning, we don't have enough planners. It's seen as sort of the civil service, which is seen as this kind of weighty, needy, expensive, like we're a bit Trump-like in that, where it's like, oh my God, it's going to take. And we hear it all the time on the radio. It's very slow in the civil service plan, but we aren't underpinning our planning department. I do think Tony's right about the balance of architects and planners and policy, but I actually think written policy is incredibly important. But I think what we need, along with three-dimensional planning, our planners are completely without power at the moment. If they decide something's not getting planning permission, it goes to on board Planola, and often they can be overruled. So how do you plan a city if the decisions you make as planners are overruled by another executive body? Surely they should be on the same page. Okay, so that's my issue. And the thing is, it shouldn't be coming down to this logjam between the community. And it's not just about spatial planning and architects' visions. It's also about integrating. And he will know this, Tony will know this from the work they do in other capitals. They integrate the community into a lot of decision making, which stops all the objections. So if so what we're having instead in Ireland is changing legislation, changing the Planning Act, going back and saying it's the planning, kind of deregulating everything to support market-driven housing, which is not producing enough housing. It never is, because it's led by profit.
Roisin
Murphy. We need a mayor.
Architect, artist, conservation activist, lecturer in Griffith College, Dublin, Tony Reddy from Reddy Architecture and Urbanism. Thank you both very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.